Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Sunday, the 9th of May, recording at 8:45 p.m. British Standard Time. This audio will deal entirely with subscribers' emails and questions. Jack says, I admire your knowledge of and ability to so effectively describe the impact of human behavior on the movement of markets via your audios. If I had the ability to react as quickly as you obviously do, I might follow more of your leads. However, holding Asian and precious metal mutual funds and not competent in hedging techniques, I seek more medium-term guidance when possible. Following your 21st April audios, I've chosen to hold the above funds for the medium term. However, it would be of interest to know if you still subscribe to the position that another rise remains likely in the markets before the secular bear market takes hold. Perhaps this again raises the question of how a medium-term investor like myself operates in a trading environment such as we are now experiencing. Well, I think that the answer to that has to be that from a medium-term perspective, I think I have been saying, Jack, over the last few months that the risks were very, very much greater, and that it was a good idea to raise some cash, to reduce exposure in stock markets, to sell on the rallies that we've been seeing over the last few months, and to not buy anything unless it was after a sell-off, but generally to take a more defensive posture because we were entering a much more difficult period in markets overall. So I favored raising cash. Might there be another rally following the current sell-off? I would think it's maybe a 50-50 possibility that it could that would occur once markets got deeply oversold. So I could well see that occurring before the U.S. presidential election, but would that rally carry stock markets meaningfully up to new highs? I doubt it. I have described maybe a few of them would reach new highs, but I think I said over the last few months that the peaks that we'd seen a couple of months ago I felt were at least penultimate peaks, and that they could easily be tested if few indices go above, but that the risk was that markets would move sideways, churn sideways at best, and move down. I have also, though, said that if I were going to belong anything, that precious metals and the Asian markets would be the ones that I would most want to hold. Although, you know, I've fully hedged, I've more than hedged my positions. I'm net short in equities overall. But the reason for favoring the precious metals and Asian stocks is that I do feel that we're talking about markets there that are going to outperform over the very long term, but they can also be exceptionally volatile, and they're seeing a correction at the moment, along with most other things. Stephen writes, BCA reinforces what you've been saying as it relates to the supply and elasticity theme for commodities. Well, that's the bank credit analyst he's referring to, an organization that I respect very, very highly, and I've swapped publications with some of their staff, writers, researchers, analysts for quite some time. I think the supply inelasticity theme, and what I've always referred to on that is that we wanted to, against the background of an immense amount of credit creation, that I felt that we would want to be interested in supply inelasticity situations more often than not. But, and this is a very big but, the devil is in the detail of market timing. Because when we're dealing with commodities, this is an exceptionally volatile sector. Elliot writes, does your negative bias for the near and intermediate term future on JGBs and U.S. Treasuries also extend to international bond funds and funds like the Alliance World Dollar, mostly Brady Bonds in Latin America? Many thanks for your thoughts. Enjoy your new site very much. Well, I think there has to be a knock-on influence there, Elliot. I don't know the Alliance World Dollar Fund, but certainly if we get yields rising in U.S. Treasuries and JGBs, or when that occurs, that has to affect some of the higher yielding bond markets. And certainly also if people can become worried about global GDP growth, then Latin American bonds would certainly be hit harder than most. It depends on what the managers are doing. I actually have a position in a little bond syndicate, and it's always terrified me, that does deal in high yielders. It's an area I don't really understand terribly well, that Mark Lowry's been running. He's done very well, but he says that the halcyon days are over for the time being, and is concentrating on more conservative issues, and particularly shorter maturities, and just relying on collecting the yield. David says, on the notion that central banks can inflate our woes away, what happens in the scenario to the slight problem of debt that is attached to low short-term rates? And then he quotes someone here, I'm not sure who, but he says, the intense downside reaction yesterday has something to do with the goodies being enjoyed by the 45-year low in short rates. Well, I mentioned that some of these emails came in. I think I mentioned it coming over the last 3 weeks or so. So he's referring back to a date in, I think, about April 18th. But David goes on to say there is the carry trade where professionals have been borrowing at 1% and getting a return 300 basis points higher. Jim Bianco says the bond market is twice as leveraged as it was 10 years ago when the Fed began a tightening round. Also, more and more consumer debt is adjustable. Of the $2.3 trillion increase in consumer debt over the past 3 years, 44% is tied to short-term rates, according to Macro Mavens. And David goes on to say, in reality, it appears that they are between a rock and a hard place, referring to central banks. Can they juggle it a bit longer? It shouldn't surprise any of us if they can, but to imagine blithely that they can simply choose inflation as the solution to the problem of massive debt and improper investment is wishful thinking, in my opinion. Well, I certainly agree, David. As I've already said and indicated, we've entered a particularly dangerous phase here, and I've said for quite some time that I felt that the U.S. Treasury bond market was an accident waiting to happen, and that accident has been occurring, and there are going to be knock-on effects of this rise in short-term interest rates. I hope, as we all hope, that the repercussions won't be too severe. But in terms of markets, we can bet that it'll be wild and a bit dangerous for sure. Michael says, I've been avidly reading your daily comments and listening to the audios over the past few weeks. You used to make positive mention of the Malaysia market quite frequently, but have made no mention of it at all recently. Have you backed away from this particular market? I apologize if I somehow missed the relevant discussion, but any guidance you could provide would be most appreciated. Thanks. I picked up a small position in my pension fund in something called the Malaysian Fund. I'm sort of late in the cycle when I did it after I'd shifted out of some of my new Thai fund, and it was because Malaysia had lagged, and I was posting and reading and posting a number of reports coming out of Asia that were talking about Malaysia as a good catch-up situation, and I felt better about it myself following the political changeover. But it's been a disappointment so far. When I look at the charts on Malaysia, I don't worry about it anywhere near as much as I'd worry about something like Wall Street, but it's not going to buck that trend. I'm losing money on that Malaysia fund at this time, but I'm going to ride that out because I've fully hedged, more than fully hedged the position. So I think that Malaysia will probably do reasonably well when stock markets or when the environment for stock markets improves once again. But we're going to have to wait for that. And I wouldn't be adding money to Malaysia or any other market at this stage. I'd wait until we saw more of an oversold condition develop generally before considering that. Norman says, Following on from your comments on similarities to 1994, I guess this is reference to bond markets. Here's an article from today's Wall Street Journal on the impact of S&P 500 ratios of the 1974 experience. Actually, Norman, I didn't see that article. That was not attached, and I went back and looked up the original email that had come in from you, and I couldn't find a link to that or an attached copy. But I get the gist. And Norman goes on to say, obviously, at that time, an increase from 3% to 6% for short-term interest rates was a 100% increase, as would be a 1% rate hike now. A point the authors seem not to have considered. I haven't checked, but I would like to compare the changes in real interest rates and in the shape of the yield curve in that period compared to what we might see if short-term rates back up to, say, 1.5% during the next 12 months, including the post-election period. Well, I'm not familiar in terms of what that actual comparison would show at this stage, but I think the most important point you're making here is that people seem to be reassuring us that this is not 1994 and that the bond market will sell off less and that the knock-on effects won't be as severe as they were then, and I'm not comforted by any of that. That just strikes me as a massive rationalization, and I think one can just as easily argue that the bond market situation is much more dangerous today than it was in 1994. I think the only difference is that people were saying that maybe the Fed had been a little bit heavy-handed. Some people have been saying that the Fed was a little heavy-handed back in 1994, whereas Greenspan's been cautious in terms of preparing the market for a rise in rates this time around. Best thing to do, though, is that if you think that the situation's dangerous, and you obviously do, and I do as well regarding the bond market, that you want to play that accordingly and not rationalize a deteriorating situation that you see analytically on both a fundamental and a technical basis. Thomas says, David, it looks as if palladium has bottomed out and found a resistance level. Trust you means, just add here, I think you means support level, just to get the language going the same way. And Thomas says, is it time to get back in, or should one wait for the US dollar euro to top and the interest rate picture to clear up? And then a second question, what is the risk that some European central banks sell gold in order to cover their government programs? Well, Thomas, I have put a couple of toes, actually, back in the palladium market, but it's dangerous at this stage. Previously, when I bought palladium, the other precious metals were all pushing higher, and palladium had the base formation, and it was a laggard, and laggards usually do catch up, if only late in the cycle. They catch up because they look like absolute bargains, if only because everything else has gone up so much. Buying when we're in the throes of a medium-term correction, at least, is a much more risky environment. So I would just be very careful there. What's the risk of some European central banks selling gold in order to cover their government programs? Well, they'll certainly do that. They're limited to, what is it, I think 500 tons a year. But Germany will be doing a considerable amount of selling. So that will be ongoing. It's a factor that is one of the factors that has caused me to conclude that gold will underperform other metals on the upside for a number of years until we have a widespread perception that there's an inflation problem, and at that point I think people will be more inclined to retreat into gold than into, say, copper or crude oil or pork bellies. James says, could you please define behavioral trading and its practical application in the market? What does it practically mean to you on a day-to-day basis, weekly basis, etc.? Well, that's a big question, James. I'll just rattle off a few things first. One, I think behavioral trading, or what I've always called behavioral technical analysis, my field, means that one is a contrarian thinker. In other words, when you see a consensus in the market, it's likely to be wrong before long. Two, critical change. I look a lot at chart dynamics because that will affect psychology. I'm also very interested in how markets react to events. In other words, a strong market goes up against the background of both good news and bad news, while a weak market comes down against the background of both bullish news and bad news. And my own thoughts on this behavioral trading would also include interrelationships. I ask a lot of what-if questions, such as, is if there's a bond sell-off, what will be the reaction elsewhere? And I think I've been talking about this for several months, saying that the stock markets would take it favorably initially, but then it would soon become bearish as people realize the implication of higher yields. I think we've seen that progression. But behavioral technical analysis is something that I'll refer to all the time, and not just in my courses. Niru says, I am also interested in your view whether you think that the upward dynamic we had in the US markets last Thursday was similar to the one we had in the latter part of March, which you said at the time it was a tradable signal. He said the signal last week looks the same to me. Now, this was sent on the 27th of April, so I can't remember the exact day you were thinking of, but I do remember it well enough, and it was shortly after I'd opened some short positions in stock markets, and I found it disconcerting. Yes, technically on the charts, it looked very similar. It was an upward dynamic, but it did occur from a higher level, and it also occurred near some overhead resistance on the charts, and it also occurred from a much less oversold condition. Arguably, it wasn't oversold at all than was the case back on the earlier upward dynamic that I'd mentioned. I think it was on the 25th of March, and you've seen the difference. The one on the 25th of March produced a very strong 3-week rally, and the one that you refer to in late April produced just a, well, it was a sort of a 1 to 2 day, 2 day wonder, and then markets have retreated subsequently. So dynamics are most important. Contra trend dynamics are most important after the trend has run for quite some time, or where you've had a sharp move, and then you suddenly get a contra trend dynamic, and that tends to get everybody or triggers the process of reconsidering positions overall, and will often coincide with a significant short-term move at least. David says, the other day you cited remarks of several Fed governors raising the specter of inflation and raising rates. You took this as a warning to the financial markets. But in following the heroic efforts by the boys at Goldman Sachs to argue that the Fed won't move this year, the following thoughts come to mind. Say, for the sake of argument, Greenspan really does want to leave rates alone. He couldn't give carte blanche to the markets by airing his complacency. Couldn't the warnings actually be the hedge that allows him to get away with an extended period of easy money policy? Well, I wasn't aware that Goldman Sachs had been saying that the Fed wouldn't raise rates this year, but a lot of people have been saying that, and it's never been my view. I think there's been a fair amount of wishful thinking in this, not least by the people who've had the big bond carry trade, who've been borrowing short term and leveraging up in the long term bond market. I think Greenspan's as aware as anyone that rates are artificially low, and that he was doing that to head off the fear of deflation. And I say f the fear of deflation, because with all that money sloshing around, I agree with those people who say that inflation, or deflation rather, was never that great a risk against this background of massive credit creation. But certainly the fear of deflation was there, and Greenspan did not want to see the US economy talk itself into the kind of slump that Japan saw for a very, very long time. But getting back to your question here, David, I think that the markets can do and have done at least part of Greenspan's job for him. In other words, interest rates go up. That is a monetary tightening process at the long end that's now occurring. But those short-term rates are going to go up as well. I think it's definite and. June wouldn't surprise me at all. The only thing that might postpone that is if the stock market really slumps between now and then. Lars says, I have a question concerning precious metals. Both you and I can clearly see that they are falling much faster in the last days than they have risen. I know what you usually say about that on your chart seminar. Does that worry you, or does that change? And does that change your longer term view? Well, they have fallen quite sharply in some instances, silver most notably. Incidentally, markets often fall faster than they go up on medium term corrections. If it's just a short term correction, it'll probably fall a little bit more slowly more often than not. But yes, it is a concern because, as I said, this is a medium term correction here, and we can't be certain that it's bottomed. There's still no clear evidence that it has bottomed, and the dollar is also firm, which is creating another headwind for these precious metals. Peter, but I feel though that I don't want to just leave it there. I feel that we've seen most of the correction in precious metals. And what do I mean by most? Well, it'll vary from metal to metal, but I think now that there's the short-term downside risk is not that great, and that the medium to longer-term upside potential is considerable. Peter says, notwithstanding the recent and ongoing bloodbath in the metals market, I wonder if you might comment briefly at some stage on the medium-term prospects for shares in the Merrill Lynch World Mining Trust, some of which I still own. I know that in the past you have owned some of these yourself. Yes, and you remember I sold mine too soon. I think it was late last year. But that has rolled over along with all these other precious metal investments and is in a corrective phase. And I'm looking at this, it's at 176.5. That's where it closed on Friday. The high was at 227. Looks like that was back on the 9th of January. I think it's seen, well, similar to what I said about precious metals, I think this has seen most of its correction. It could easily go lower. I don't see any evidence that it's bottomed yet. And these metal shares, first the precious metals themselves have been soft, so that will weigh on this fund, but also the stock markets are weak generally, so that'll weigh on this fund as well. But it's starting to get interesting again, and I can quite easily, well, I can easily imagine myself buying this at some stage again over the next few months. David says, you wrote, and he quotes me, the Fed chairman has been roundly criticized for this action for which there will be an eventual inflationary price to pay. However, just imagine the much greater uproar if Greenspan had not reflated so aggressively. I hope you are not. And then David said, that's a end quote. That is a quote of a sentence of mine that was in the comment of the day. And David says, I hope you are not sanctioning his actions with these words and your hypothesis that his actions will ultimately be inflationary instead of contributing to a much more severe possible depression if and when the asset bubbles burst seems to me just that, a hypothesis. Giving an alcoholic one more drink because he is in the throes of the odd DTs is not something a friend would do. A pusher? Well, yes. Well said. Overall, I'm glad I'm not a central banker, let alone in Greenspan's shoes. But with everybody worrying about deflation, and with a real deflationary risk, I'm not surprised he increased the money supply very, very aggressively. But I feel this is, well, everything's a hypothesis here in terms of forecasting, but certainly, as I've said before, he's sown the seeds for an inflation. Does inflation solve all the debt problems? Of course not. It eases them somewhat, but there's always a price to pay. There's always a trade-off here. But your point is that it's not going to offset the possibility of a severe recession, and you actually use the word depression. I think that the problem will be that a little bit of monetary tightening, and we'll see U.S. GDP growth slow. I would expect that in 2005, 2006, and then the Fed's going to get worried again and perhaps start to stimulate once again. So I said that I think we're being for more turbulent economic conditions than most people are expecting. But I'm not going to forecast disaster. I don't see a depression on the horizon, and that is maybe wishful thinking on my part, but as some wag said, I've seen the end of the world unsuccessfully forecast too many times to try to improve on that record, and I've tried to stick to that in my own forecasting. What concerns me most is how we actually read the markets and trade and invest here to look after ourselves in what will be interesting conditions, to put it mildly. Last letter. Leslie says, I would just like to provide feedback about your MP3 service. This is the audio service. He says, this service is a superb addition. I live in Australia and use dial-up internet. With a normal audio service, I experienced many interruptions when playing the audio, and a 20-minute audio frequently turned into a 30 to 40-minute audio. Now the playback on my desktop PC is seamless. In addition, I can listen to your audio whilst driving to work. This is a superb feature for me. I also feel your daily audios are a superb feature, and moving away from hard copy is a good move. I much prefer to listen to your audio whilst driving the car or scanning through my charts at home. The audio has the ability to provide the added dimension of listening to your sentiment or level of enthusiasm for a trade or position, which is hard to pick up in a written word, i.e., it is much better to talk or listen to someone to get their true feeling for a position as opposed to reading a written report. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you, Leslie. I am glad that you and others clearly found the MP3 audio service of interest. I noticed that it's maybe a fifth or sixth of the people using the audio are now using the MP3. Truth to tell, I didn't even know what that was when you and others first mentioned and requested that, and then I handed that over to our IT people, and they researched it, and they wanted to be able to do it so that I didn't have to make two separate audios, and succeeded in doing that. And we will continually try to refine and enhance the website service in line with your interests. However, at the risk of opening Pandora's box on that, I'll say that some things I'm not prepared to do with the service. I know a number of subscribers still lament the loss of the old hard copy, and would like me to go back to that in addition to the other things I'm doing. And other people would like to have the audios transcribed because they prefer the written word, which they can cart around with them, to something that you have to listen to. I res would resist both of those. First, I can't go back to the hard copy because I feel that in terms of technology, I can produce my better research using the formats that I am using on the Fuller Money service now. And my own enthusiasm is in part of this is a key factor, as you'll appreciate. I could quite easily envisage myself going on for the next 10 years, and hopefully a lot more, working in this fashion for the full of money service, whereas I couldn't with that hard copy letter, which I found really quite restrictive and limiting. And as far as translating, transcribing the audio, well, I think your point here saying provides an added dimension in terms of sentiment or level of enthusiasm for a trader position. I'm quoting from Leslie's audio, and I wouldn't have the time to transcribe the audio. And if anyone else did it for me, it would be paraphrasing, and I certainly wouldn't want to endorse that. But other suggestions that people have put forward, for instance, I want to have a search engine on the site that could go through the forum, that could go through a comment of the day and the archive. I think that would be quite useful, and we'll have other enhancements. But I have gone on long enough with this audio, so I'll just wish you a very good evening.